IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. This month's Catching Up podcast. I am Alyssa Murray Cometti here with Hallie Griggs. How's it going, Hallie?
Good. It's been a while since we officially on the podcast have caught up, so to speak. So I'm excited to be here and chat about an action-packed few weeks we've seen in April thus far.
I know. Last time I was here, it was with Rachel. You were on spring break. Rachel is super busy with the PLL recently, and so she may have less of a presence. We're hoping that she can join us in a few weeks here and there once things calm down for her, but you know, she took a new job and is, or new role at the PLL and is super, super busy. So we'll just keep her up to date with our group text and hopefully she can join us sooner rather than later. But give us the download on how high school season's been and everything that's been going on with you.
Yeah, you know, high school season and the coach at Greenwich Academy has been off to a great start. You know, I think overwhelmingly all of the girls on my team and so many of the teams that we've played or, you know, are on our schedule, I think we're just happy that the season feels a bit more normal, you know. Last year, I know at Greenwich Academy, the girls were playing in masks. The schedule was heavily restricted based on travel. You know, they didn't have a spring break trip last year. This year they did, based on who we could play, when we could play. And I think I speak for, you know, every coach that is having a bit more of a normal season this year. It's nice to see that the kids are really enjoying that and a little bit more freedom. And it's been really nice to see. I mean, I think last year, given a lot of those restrictions, we didn't have the opportunity to see a lot of these regional powers leave their region. You know, we didn't even see a New York State champion crowned last year. So I think it's been really nice, at least, you know, certainly as a coach, but someone who follows the high school landscape very closely and always did it in Seven Cross. It's been really nice to see a lot of these regional powers get out and play each other again. It's led to, you know, certainly some shakeups in the poll, so to speak, but I don't think this poll has really been incredibly accurate and no fault of anyone's since 2019, right? Because so many of these teams haven't really, really played each other. So it's nice to see a little bit more of that consistency and fluidity this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's awesome that, you know, New York teams are starting to be able to go outside of their own little bubble, play Maryland teams, play upstate New York teams, Connecticut. It's really shaping up to be an awesome year. And I think as the weeks go on and, you know, you have a big matchup against St. Anthony's next week, and it'll be fun to kind of see where everyone shakes out as more teams play each other. It's crazy that Florida teams and down south are already close to playoffs and you guys are just pretty much beginning, but that's kind of how it goes every year as the Northeast plays through June and everyone else is done by May pretty much. So as it goes on, I'm sure we'll be able to kind of tell who is the best of the best, but it's really interesting to see that early on how it's been going. But seems like St. Paul's is just running away again with a big lead on everyone else.
You know, it's so funny because a lot of the time, like that little high school indoor championship that In South Lacrosse partners with Chris Robinson on, I've always found it to be such a indicator of the teams that are really going to take off. Very often the team that wins that tournament and the team they beat end up being, you know, in the top two or three. We've seen that trend ever since that event started, but 5 or 6 years ago. And St. Paul's Wilbur girls, you were at that tournament. Nobody could hold a candle to them, really. So is it a surprise that they are absolutely, you know, they went wire to wire with that tournament last year? Is it a surprise that they're kind of, you know, kicking you-know-whats and taking names right now? I just feel like they're stacked and everyone kind of knew that they would be.
Yeah, they are so balanced. So, I mean, I feel like Clemson is just getting such a star in Natalie Shurtleff. Like, she was so impressive. Madison Beal, too, who's headed to Duke next year. Just, like, all across the board, they have stars. And their younger talent is impressive. Their older talent is impressive. But, yeah, I think if you can play well on a small stage like that where no one can hide, you're just going to be that much better on an open field with more space. I always compare it to basketball where it's like there's five people out there. You cannot hide. When it's smaller field, faster than it is on a big field, that just shows the high skill level. So, yeah, they were impressive, and they continue to be so far.
Yeah, and it's so funny. I mean, you look at I think the Mid-Atlantic teams sometimes, you know, you look at our poll right now and, you know, the one team that brought St. Paul's to overtime, they're ranked 22nd in our poll. And they're the closest team within striking distance. You know, McDonough's ranked third. St. Paul's just beat them 17-8. You know, it's crazy. I feel like a lot of those Baltimore area teams in particular in the IAAA division, they're playing a really exciting brand of lacrosse. And I don't know collectively as a whole, I know it's crazy to say because we have several of the teams in that conference in this poll. I don't know if they get the credit that they deserve just because they beat up on each other throughout the year. I think there's a lot of talent that goes a little bit unsung. But, you know, also looking at this poll, I really love seeing the New York teams kind of working their way in. Last year, we didn't get to crown a New York State champion, so we really didn't get an opportunity. I mean, you know, I'm an upstater. You're a Long Island girl. We didn't get to see, you know, the battle of the best and, you know, class A, B, C, and D for, you know, upstate or downstate bragging rights. So I'm excited that we'll have the opportunity to see that again. A team like Victor, I mean, it was so impressive. They drive down for their spring break from the Rochester area. They lose to Darien High School by one. They beat New Canaan High School by one. Against Darien, they received their fourth card. I mean, I think they were man down for, you know, 18 or so minutes in that game. For them to come down and really push two of the top teams in the country, I really liked their jump in the poll. You know, looking at where they were, you know, they were at 16, they're now at 5. I think that's a well-earned jump, and really cool that they had the opportunity to take that trip and use those games to make a statement.
Yeah, it seems like, you know, your best bet, if you're a solid team from anywhere in the country, you have to go and play the best, just like college. I mean, it's the only way that you can really be recognized when there's no national championship of high schools. We know where the best teams are consistently. We know, especially, you know, as you said, the indoor championship gives us a little bit of a pulse on where the best talent is. And so to get your name, throw your name in the ring, you've got to go and play that talent. And I give a lot of credit to teams like Loyola Academy in Chicago, you know, American Heritage in Florida, those sort of teams that are just going and, you know, taking on the teams in Baltimore, Long Island, and that sort of thing. And that's how you get better. That's how, you know, you prepare your players for the next level, because these teams have players that are headed to Division I colleges as well. So it's the only way that you do it.
Yeah. And the last plug I'll make, it's a tournament that we're playing in this weekend, but truly just we're just happy to be a part of it. You know, Andrew Rappaport, he's put together that Games for Brains tournament. It raises awareness and funds for the Making Headway Foundation, but he's really put together a very, very solid lineup of teams. You know, New Canaan and Darien, they play tomorrow, but we'll see New Canaan take on Northport, which I'm super excited about. I'm excited to see St. Anthony's in action, probably less excited to be on the other end of it. But, you know, I was excited to see Canandaigua Academy up in action, you know, last weekend too. But to see the teams that, you know, he has competing in that event, it's going to be a great day of lacrosse. Sacred Heart Greenwich is going to be there. You know, you look on Sunday, I know Mount Sinai is playing. Cold Spring Harbor is hosting one day. Mount Sinai is hosting another day. You know, there are several top 25 showdowns taking place this weekend. And I think, you know, an important lesson for the girls, certainly playing for bragging rights, but playing for something much bigger. So I'm excited to see, and we'll see if it leads to some shakeups in this poll next time you guys push this out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it seems like, you know, teams that are maybe not be on the list that are in that event could easily make their way and are sitting right outside of that top 25. But a win for any team really could show some new faces come next week. So it should be exciting.
Yeah.
Taking things to Division I college, speaking about shakeups, let's talk about the Duke upset on Boston College. You're a big Maddie Jenner fan. Tell us about what you thought her performance was like on Saturday.
I think, I feel like I've been, especially in our, you know, in our little group chat, you, Rachel, and I, that we're just kind of always with the in-game banter. If one of us is missing it, we'll keep each other cheated. You know, one thing I think I've, you know, been saying all season long, the rate at which Duke gets the ball versus their opponents this year is remarkable. I mean, they are dominating teams on the draw control because Maddie Jenner is dominating teams at the draw. You know, you look at individual draw controls per game, she's leading the nation with 12.56 draw controls per game. She has 201 already on the season. It's almost two draws more than Jill Girardi, who I know you're a big fan of her, at Northwestern. But, you know, Duke is their draw control percentage. They're getting almost 65% of the draws in every game that they play. You know, I think that she's the ultimate X factor. She flexed that muscle against Boston College this week. I mean, credit to Boston College as they started to mount their comeback. They started to improve in the draw circle a little bit more. But, you know, I look at a team like Duke where they've got offensive weapons. They can attack from every angle. I like the way they play against the zone. I like the way they play against the man. When you have a player that can get you the ball as much as Maddie Jenner gets her team the ball, it's, you know, she's just, I think she's the biggest X factor in the NCAA right now. And then, you know, on the game winning side, I thought it was really cool that she scored the game winner, just because I think if there is the play of one player on that field that won the game for Duke, it was Jenner's play in the circle. But to see her get that look and put it away offensively, I thought it was very fitting.
I agree. She is an X factor. And I think the only way that you beat Duke is getting it away from her on the draw. And I think, you know, their lone loss of the season to Syracuse, that was an adjustment that that Syracuse had made. If you can rack your brain to that game, I was just looking it up. Emma Tyrell was big on the circle for them in that game after Syracuse was not just drawing it straight up in the air. Maddie Jenner still got 10 draw controls of the game. But, you know, when you look at her numbers, she's got 12, 19, 11, 21 against High Point, 15 against Penn. You know, 10 is just like an okay game. But still, for most people, is insane. She had 12 against Boston College, 17 against Virginia Tech. So it really, you need to get it away from her. Because when Duke can play knowing that they're going to get the ball back after a mistake, you can play so much more freely. And I think that, on the flip side, was the downfall of Boston College. Like, they played tight. They played not like themselves because they felt the pressure. They were playing from behind. They were playing, you know, making not the best decisions with the ball. Although credit to Bell Smith, had a great day. She looked amazing. Probably the best she's looked all season.
I think the best I've ever seen her look.
Yeah.
She was everywhere. You know, I don't know, like you mentioned, when you're trying to play and come from behind, it's really hard to do that when you don't have the ball. So right. I think that Jenner also, just looking at this, she went 2 for 2. She shot 100% on the day. She had one turnover. That always amazes me. You know, players that have the ball in their stick, as much as Maddie Jenner had the ball in her stick against Boston College this weekend, to shoot 100% from the field, to have one turnover. I mean, she was just statistically almost as perfect as you could be in that game. But I, again, when you look at a team like Charlotte North, I mean, there's so much pressure on her because she's such a visible player in this game, but players sometimes are allowed to have an off day. And I think right. that there, I mean, especially the vitriol I saw on social media, which I know we'll get to in a little while, coming after Charlotte North, I was blown away by. She didn't have her best day from the field. She still had a pair of goals. But I think the biggest thing for Boston College in this game is when your best player wasn't able to step up and produce, wow, the players around her. I mean, Bell Smith, career high 9 points, played remarkable end-to-end, made some huge plays, caused turnovers, ground balls to claw Boston College's way back in. Then you look at Kayla Martello, 4 goals. I thought she did great, especially against that zone defense, getting open on the inside, finishing in tight spaces. Jen Medjid, 3 goals, 3 assists. I think that honestly for Boston College, that's kind of what I wanted to see. When things break down and Charlotte can't do Charlotte things, how's the rest of her team going to respond? So if I'm Acacia and I look at, you know, it's uncharacteristic for Rachel Hall to have another 16% day in goal. I mean, that was a huge kind of glaring. It wasn't her best day in goal. It's certainly uncharacteristic for Charlotte to score 2 goals, but to know the rest of your team is able to carry that load and make it a 1-goal game, I don't know if I'm in like a terrible mood flying home to Boston. I think there's a lot for that team to be proud of. Holly Fletcher, 7 draw controls, 4 caused turnovers. There are some really bright spots for Boston College too.
Yeah. I mean, it's similar to the game that we talked about last year, UNC losing to Boston College. How many games are you going to say that, you know, Taylor Moreno isn't going to have her best day? Emma Trenchard isn't going to have her best day. Ali Mastriani isn't going to have, like, how many times is that going to happen in a year? Not often. These are the country's best players. So, you know, yes, everyone is allowed to have an off game. And it stinks when multiple of players on the same team have that day. But if I'm Boston College, I agree. I'm walking away from this with the silver lining that, okay, Kayla Martello, she became a veteran, you know, a freshman, McKenna Davis, 2 goals on 3 shots, including a sweep behind the back. She grew up, and you know that's the sort of stuff that you need to look at if you're the Boston College staff heading into ACC tournament, NCAA tournament, because this is just a game. And ultimately, you played one of the toughest schedules in the country. It's not really going to affect your seed, I don't think, too much when it comes to. So, you know, silver lining isn't all that bad of a loss for Boston College. A great win for Duke, but also not the end of the world for Boston College moving forward. You know, sometimes you need a gut check and you need to realize what you need to do. You know, when you can't always rely on Charlotte to put up 7 goals on 7 shots. So,
well, this is also a BC team that lost 4 times and won when it mattered last year.
Exactly.
Too rattled that they lost a game.
Exactly.
That's kind of nice when it's just like it makes that a little bit more real. It makes it easier to focus on what you need to do to improve.
And, right.
You know, the other piece I will say though, to just, you know, credit Duke, before I move on to the last bit of this.
Right.
I was really impressed with just the overall game plan that, you know, the coaches put together. I liked the defensive matchups that they kind of put in there. I thought the zone played remarkably well. And then, you know, you look at players like, you know, Kat Berry. I thought that she was very composed, poised. She had that great little question mark dodge to get the game, I don't know, tied or put it up. I forget kind of where it was, but that was a highlight reel goal.
That was awesome.
3 draw controls, right? You know, you look at Anna Callahan stepping up with a hat trick. You know, I honestly don't know her injury status. I thought Sophia LaRose, when she left the field and had to be assisted off the field, I hope everything's well, for a freshman goalkeeper to come in and fill the shoes of a goalie that was playing really hot, and make a huge save against Charlotte North at a crucial moment. You know, I think Kennedy Everson played well. Sophia Lourdes played phenomenally. I hope she's okay. Cause I think if Duke is going to make a run in the NCAA tournament, they're going to, you know, really need a veteran goalie there. But I just thought top to bottom, I mean, Duke is a team that we haven't seen them in tough matchups. That's the one thing I will say. Their schedule in the beginning of the year, we didn't see top five, top 10 matchups. But I think that this was a big statement for them of what they're capable of. I'm excited to see how their game goes against North Carolina this week.
I'm really excited for that. And I agree. I mean, I became an Anna Callahan fan. She's like so tough, so fun to watch. She was firing everyone up. I loved it. Agree about Sophia LaRose. And when Kennedy Everson made that save, I was like, off of free position, Charlotte North, like her patented, you know, makes goalies quake.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, can you imagine? I would have like started crying if I was the goalie.
It was not. No, I mean, credit to them. They had a great game plan. Boston College fought hard. I thought this was a nice little teaser headed into the ACC tournament stretch that it's not just North Carolina, Boston College, right? You know, I think crazier things could happen. This is a Duke team that they beat Pitt by one in March.
Yeah.
You know, the Syracuse, that crazy roller coaster of a game. You know, you look at, they beat Virginia Tech by one last time out before the BC game. So you think of these scores that we've seen. I'm really excited to see what the entire ACC does top to bottom in the ACC tournament. I think we're going to see some upsets.
Yep, I agree. It'll be a really, really exciting game. Our next little tidbit before we move on is about social media.
Excuse me.
While I have a coughing fit, Hallie, you want to start us off?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I didn't love, and again, I just think that it was such a marquee win. And such a way to celebrate your seniors, right? It's their senior day. You know, one of your seniors dominates the draw, scores the game winner. It's your last home game before the postseason. The final game tweet from the Duke account was Queens of the North, or Queens of the South, sorry, hashtag Go Duke, with kind of the final score, which anyone that follows closely knows that they call Charlotte North the Queen of the North. Kind of a fun little tidbit. You and I love our Game of Thrones names. So I thought Queens of the South was definitely a shot at the Queen of the North, a player that used to play for Duke. I was disappointed in that wording. You know, I think that there were so many different ways that you could celebrate your team and players in that. I just felt like that wasn't the necessary place, to pretty publicly kind of, I hate to use the word take a shot, but that's just kind of what I felt like it looked like. And then the most disappointing was just looking, I'm just pulling it up now, the quote tweets. And it's really disappointing the way that some people responded. Who's Charlotte North anyway? Go Duke. Queen of the North, downward trend, downward trend, downward trend. Down goes number eight North. Charlotte North using a clown emoji. She's directly tagged in all of these at Charlotte North regretting transferring right now. I think that these, you know, I think when you put something out there like that on social media that has that type of tone to begin with, people are going to take it and run for it. And I thought that was really unfortunate. For Charlotte to, you know, her phone to be blowing up with that. And I just didn't think that that was, the way that that needed to be celebrated. I think there were so many on-field successes that could have been celebrated instead of that. And I guess we'll see who the real queens of the South are. Tobacco Road battle.
Right.
Duke versus North Carolina. But yeah, it was just, I don't know. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think I mentioned this often when I feel like it comes up to me during March Madness, where it's just like, there's typically so many upsets in basketball. It's a different game than like football where you don't see this as often, or that kind of craziness as often. And people just, I mean, Twitter is like, can be a crazy place, right? Like you have no censors and all of that, but it's just, you know, let's not stoop that low. Like these kids, and I say it when it comes to NCAA basketball, I know we're supposed to call them men and women, but they are young. Like they're still, like I felt like I was a kid in college still. Like I feel like it's fair to say that, you know, they're kids. They're still young. They're playing, and you know, they're not a professional athlete where this is their full-time job. And, you know, taking criticism is a part of the job. They are student athletes doing the best that they can. And I think it's crazy the amount of heat that these fans get. And, you know, I mean, it's a perfect example right now. Syracuse men aren't having the best season. And, you know, locally up here, it's just like these kids, it's as if they, you know, let the entire city of Syracuse down. It's like, they're just doing the best they can. The coaches are doing the best they can. And, you know, Charlotte didn't have her best job, best game. It's going to happen. You know, LeBron James doesn't have his best game all the time, but he's also a professional basketball player who has been, you know, trained on how to handle this and expects it.
Yeah. I just think that, you know, and this is, it's coming a week or two after I had the opportunity to read a letter to College Sports that Caitlin Bracken penned for the Mental Matchup,
yes,
which is wonderfully gone viral within the lacrosse community. It was on Good Morning America recently. Her words moved me to tears. And I mean, to echo what you just said, like these are student athletes, they're trying their best. We just need to be nicer on social media. And yeah, that was just that, that was the really unfortunate, as I'm scrolling through Twitter after that game, I was like, wow, I can't even believe this is out there. And ooh, these comments are savage. I guess just be nicer. Let's appreciate how everyone's playing, how hard everyone's working, the fact that, you know, college lacrosse is back and in a good place. And
how entertaining. If you're entertained by them, just enjoy that was an entertaining game. Even if your team won or lost, it was a one goal game, highly, highly like talented play. So I feel like just take that away rather than take a shot at a player who has proven that she's one of the best in the country and doing great things for the sport as a whole.
Yeah, no, I agree. And if you haven't read that letter, a letter to College Sports, when this podcast is up, we'll reply with this, a link to it, just so you read it. Highly recommend reading it. And moving right along.
Moving right along, bigger and better things. Okay. So preview of Duke UNC, what do you think it's going to take for Duke to have another big upset, kind of left turn here?
I mean, this is no disrespect to Boston College. I just think North Carolina's defense is a lot better than Boston College's defense. So I think for a team that gets the ball as much as Duke, I'm sorry, my dogs are going crazy in the background. I think a team that gets the ball as much as Duke, it's going to take a really good offensive outing to beat North Carolina. I don't think Taylor Moreno is a goalie that, going to save 16%. I think that a lot of things would have to go right. I think Emma Trenchard is, you know, one of the best in the game, but the entire defensive corps, they have a fleet of midfielders. It's going to, Duke might get the ball, but it's going to be harder to put it in the back of the net. And that's kind of the matchup I like in this in particular game. I think North Carolina has the best defense in the country.
Yeah, I agree. I think Moreno is just, you know, her numbers are not necessarily the same at this current moment as they were last year. She's just under 50% save percentage, I believe, where last year she was nearing 55%. But, you know, the season is still, you know, there's so much lacrosse left to be played. We saw Rachel Hall's percentage skyrocket from a huge performance in the postseason. So, you know, I think she's regardless of what her save percentage is, I think Taylor Moreno is one of the best, if not the best, in the country. And, you know, if she has a good game against Duke, it's moments like that where it just proves how highly talented she is in cage and how it's just so hard to get the ball past her. I mean, back-to-back weekend, she has these like viral moments making saves. It's just insane. Like, she has the crazy one against Notre Dame, and then just recently, it's escaping me who they played, but did you see she one-upped it? So she had two saves back-to-back, and then it turned into three this past weekend. I'm like, all right, well.
I honestly think that, you know, looking at her numbers, it's just, you know, she's had her fair share of up and downs, but 70% outing versus Notre Dame, 53 versus Virginia, 61 versus Pitt, 57 versus Pitt, 61 versus Jacksonville, 55% day in goal for Northwestern game. She brings her best for her best competition, which is, you know, Taylor Moreno. I feel like she's just on a team full of X factors. She's a tough one to beat for North Carolina.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. Hopefully Sophia LaRose will be back in cage. She had a great game. Hopefully she is healthy. She was huge for them, for Duke, but you never know. But at least they know that they are tested in cage and that they've got a freshman that's ready to go. But we shall see. That'll be Thursday and it'll be really exciting. So I think that'll be a good test to kind of see, you know, who would be the favorite. I think if UNC wins, they're going to be the favorite, of course, for the ACC championship. Not that they're unbeatable. We saw Boston College obviously right on their heels. Syracuse lost by two. We'll see how the Duke game goes, but then, you know, it should be interesting. But let's take it to the Big Ten. We've talked about the ACC a ton. We have Maryland Northwestern coming up. What are your thoughts?
Ooh, I've just been so, I mean, when you think of lacrosse rivalries, it's, even though it's not a very new rivalry, you know, the two winningest programs in the history of the game are Northwestern and Maryland. So the fact that they're now playing for conference bragging rights, I don't think that there's love lost there. I feel like those teams in a very healthy kind of rivalry way, they know it kind of all comes down to them, you know, kind of like we saw last year. I think the Big Ten has just been, anyone's game on any given day. But I think for Northwestern, especially, it has been nice to see, especially since that loss to North Carolina in early March. I feel like they've really put the pieces together and found their identity without Izzy Skeen, right? Like who is Northwestern this year? I think Lauren Gilbert, you know, she's playing phenomenally. Erin Quakendell has really become that dual threat attacker, true quarterback for them. You know, Jill Girardi is just an absolute nightmare in the midfielder. She's so fast, great on the draw. Brendan Dwyer adds depth there, and she's making a little bit more of an offensive impact this year. You know, I like Northwestern in this matchup just because I think they're a bit more battle tested. But Aurora accordingly is kind of, you know, I think if there's a transfer making a splash in the NCAA this year, it's her. You know, for her to seamlessly transition into College Park and lead the team with almost double the point production. You know, she's 90 points to Lubecker's 48, 54 goals, 36 assists. She is really leading this team in a new look way for this offense. You know, they have kind of that dual threat player in her. They have really a powerful dodger in Hannah Lubecker. Libby May, I feel like Eloise Clevenger is also a little bit more of that dual threat facilitator. You know, there's a lot of new faces in College Park stepping up, which is exciting. And I think this, you know, you look at their schedule, you know, aside from the James Madison loss, this is the first game on the schedule that a top 10, really top, certainly top five, but, you know, first game since that Florida game and that JMU game, it's really a top 10 matchup for them. So I'm excited to see how they fare versus Northwestern. And you know, I think that it's a huge opportunity for them in terms of their RPI. You know, right now at this time of year, I think you do start looking ahead to NCAA seeding. You know, I think Maryland needs a win over Northwestern or a Big Ten tournament win, win over Northwestern there to look right now probably at a home seed in the tournament just based on where RPI stands right now. So I don't know. It's going to be good.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing about top eight seed. It's not a guarantee for Maryland. Right now they're ranked the eighth, I forget. They may have moved up.
Well, this week they're five in the NCAA RPI. You know, they're currently ranked.
They're eighth in the country right now on the poll, but RPI, they're what?
They're fifth in RPI, but again, not fifth in RPI before
right.
their game against Northwestern. They could likely play Northwestern twice. Right. Who knows what's going to happen in the Big Ten tournament, but they also have Michigan on the slate. So I don't know. I think this is a pretty crucial game for them. You know, you look at games through April 17th. So this was updated yesterday. Duke is still 12th in this poll. So, you know, you might. Largely, this RPI has rewarded teams putting together a strong schedule. So yeah. It'd be interesting, I think, that for Maryland to keep working their way up in the RPI, a win against Northwestern would be key for them, for sure.
Yeah, and I think a key for Northwestern to get the win would be to slow accordingly down, obviously. She's only had two games where she scored under 3 points or less, and that was James Madison, where they lost, and the other one was against Johns Hopkins, where they had an easy win, which is kind of one of those games where it's like, you know, everyone's scoring, so they don't necessarily need her to be the one to step up there. But you know, it worked for James Madison; they held her to just a goal and two assists, and Ohio State was hanging in there with them for a while, but ultimately in the second half, she really got things going, ended up finishing with 4 goals and 3 assists. And it's when you let the leading scorer like that just take over, especially one who's not only a goal scorer, but facilitates for other people, it really just makes it that much more dangerous. So it'll be key for Northwestern to kind of lock her up a bit. But I'm sure Coach Almonte has a big plan for that, as she's no stranger to accordingly or just locking down great attackers and midfielders on the offensive end. I agree about Gilbert, Quickendall, and Girardi. Quick shout out to Girardi. I love the way that she plays. She is so tough. Beyond what she does on the draw control, I just like her gritty style of play. So
she's got to
give a little love to that.
She's like your favorite player. You're always talking about her.
I know. She's a little beast. I like it.
It's interesting, too, when you look at that. Like, one thing I think Northwestern has such an X factor, like, they have so many threats on the draw. And yeah. I don't know, just because, you know, we haven't had the big marquee matchups that Northwestern, you know, Northwestern has played a very challenging schedule to, you know, kick off their season. They kicked it off at Boston College. They had Notre Dame early, Syracuse early, North Carolina early, Stony Brook relatively early. So we haven't seen a true kind of top 10 matchup for Northwestern since early March. But one thing I like for Northwestern, even over all those teams aforementioned, they have so many options on the draw. And that's another that's going to be really key for Maryland. You look at, this is a team that has 1-2 players that have over 50 draws. How many do Girardi and Dwyer have? I feel like they have a million.
Girardi has 142.
Okay, a million.
Gilbert has 39 and Dwyer has 25. And then they have, you know, like Samantha Smith, Samantha White, both have 29 and 28.
That's pretty awesome.
So, I mean, those numbers seem like tiny compared to Girardi's, but it's still like,
she's just getting
a good amount. She and Jenner are just overachievers.
Just really overachieving. Yeah, you're already grabbing 10.92 draws a game. I mean, I think that's going to be the ultimate X factor this weekend. And it's going to be, I don't know, it's going to be a good one. What else is on tap this weekend? Chat at ACC, Big Ten.
Yeah, we have Yale-UConn midweek. I'm excited for that. I feel like that'll be a really good opportunity.
So I just step on my Connecticut like soapbox here. I don't like where UConn is in the polls. I think that they're like, you look at their losses. They lost to JMU. They lost to Denver. Denver took Boston College to the wire. You know, they have wins. This is where it always gets me. They a head-to-head win over UMass. You know, I don't understand why they wouldn't be ranked higher than them. I think UConn's a little bit of a sleeper. Sydney Watson in her swan song. And I love the way Yale's playing too. You know, 9-2, they've had, you know, some certainly loss to Boston College, Notre Dame, you know, whatever. But I like what they're doing in the Ivy League right now. You know, I think that everyone, when the year started, knew that Princeton would be the front runner. I think Yale's kind of been that dark horse, that dark bulldog, we'll call them. but I, you know, I'm really excited to see how that game goes. But win or lose, I don't think either of those teams are getting the credit they deserve.
I agree. And it'll be interesting. And, you know, shout out to Yale. For the first time, they made it, they clinched a spot in the Ivy tournament. So they have not even yet to play Columbia or Princeton. They still have UConn and Stony Brook out of conference, which would be really interesting games themselves. But last game of the year for Princeton and Yale is against each other. So that could be a little bit of a foreshadowing of a game shortly after that. So should be interesting of how it all ends up. I know Rachel will be pulling for the Tigers, of course, but it should be a really fun game to watch. I think both Princeton and Yale have some young talent that's performing alongside of, you know, Yale has Marker, Princeton has Sears and company, but I'm excited to see how that pans out. What's interesting to me is the CAA and America East, obviously JMU and Stony Brook aren't going to be in the tournament. Yeah. So not a guarantee. I mean, I think Stony Brook, of course, should make it in. JMU has a few, they have the Maryland win, but they also have some losses that could potentially hurt them. But I would guess that they're still going to make the tournament if I had to guess, as long as they win out from here. But could kind of mean that we'll see, you know, maybe an Albany in the tournament, someone from the CAA that may have not made it last year. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting. I think the way that like James Madison, you know, we were talking on the group chat recently, we were talking about like, who's a team you always root for. And I feel like I always root for JMU just because I, you know, their championship run and being on the sideline for that Memorial Day weekend, but especially in that game, just listening to the way that Shelly plays really, you know, gets her team going and motivates them is really unique and really special. And I just love, you know, I love the fact that, you know, these are student athletes that in one way or the other were under-recruited by several other top Division I programs, but they get to college, they work hard, they believe in their coach's process, and they produce. So, you know, when they beat Maryland, they had that loss to North Carolina. They, you know, the loss to Virginia Tech, the loss to Penn State, those are kind of the bad losses, so to speak, when you look at quality wins or, you know, bad losses, just in the fact that those opponents weren't ranked. And then they had the loss to Rutgers. So they're turning the corner into the end of March, and their backs are up against the wall. They don't have the ability to play for a conference AQ, and they need to string together some quality wins to at least have a crack at the NCAA tournament. And what do? They beat Virginia and they beat Maryland in back-to-back games. So I do. I mean, I think, again, it stinks having to fight for the at-large bid, right? Because so much is out of your control. What if North Carolina gets knocked out in the first round of the ACC tournament? What if Pitt wins the whole ACC tournament? Like, so many of those crazy what-ifs, right? You know, what if Arizona State wins the Pac-12? What if, you know, there's just there's a lot of different what ifs that you could play. But I think that those two wins and the fact that they've won out, a lot of it is how you finish. They're finishing strong. You know, a win against Delaware, a win against Drexel will be huge for JMU. But I do think that they've put themselves in, you know, strong position to get an at-large. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, I think Stony Brook's pretty much a lock for an at-large right now. But it does, it leaves way for, you know, we haven't seen in the CAA, we've seen multiple teams make it to the NCAA tournament, whether JMU won or not. You know, a couple years ago, Elon earned an at-large bid. Drexel earned an at-large bid last year for the first time. Towson's no stranger to dancing. But usually the America East, especially in the last 3 or 4 years, it's been a one-bid conference. So Stony Brook's inability to capture or even have a chance to capture the AQ there, it is a wide open race. So it's going to be interesting for sure. But that also leaves, you know, with teams like Stony Brook and with teams like JMU, especially with that Maryland and that Virginia win, that leaves two less spots for at-large bids, in my opinion. So it's interesting the way this is all shaking out.
Yeah, it should be interesting. And I think we covered a lot of big conferences. We'll have to hop back on and talk about the next batch of conference tournaments as we near the end of the regular season. But I think that's all for now, unless you have some closing thoughts.
Some closing thoughts? No. How's your first season at the helm of IL Women going?
It's been good. Hopefully, everyone feels that it's been good.
I think it's been great.
It's been good for me.
I love following along. No, it's I just have to give you a little shout out. It's so nice to be a fan and a reader of IL Women and kind of just be following everything that you and, you know, the IL team has been doing. I think the content this year has been better than ever. Doing an awesome job. And it's been great. I'm loving the stories. I thought Maggie Cook's story.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You know, the Loyola check-in was amazing. Beth Ann, shout out Beth Ann. She was kind of like the IL Women hero for me for a while. So excited for her next chapter. But she left on a high note this spring. Everything looks great. You did an awesome job. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. Well, it's been great. I was handed off a nice little, what do they say? I handed off a Cadillac, just told not to crash it or something with the keys to a Cadillac.
Just told not to crash.
So I'm just trying to keep it straight.
All right, keep it straight. You're doing an awesome job. It's like gone into the dealer and upgraded a little bit. So it's been nice to watch. But yeah, looking forward, hopefully I have Rachel back in the fold. But looking forward to the next time we catch up, which will probably be after ACCs and probably after the first weekend of tournament play, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And then we'll be right into, maybe we'll do a pre-selection Sunday or reaction to selection Sunday. We'll see how it goes. We'll tweet it out.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
All right. See ya.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport.